there was the possibility to say to everybody, we can all work together. We founded this amazing organization that is helping rescues and shelters all over the world now.
You're not trying to scam people. And I think there are a lot of people out there that are, both in the holistic and the conventional sense. You know what I mean?
Like so many things in the world, your belief system is created around your personal experience. The trusting that all of these things are happening in the right place at the right time for the right reason is the hardest part, to be honest with you.
I'm already getting emotional.
For many people, the love of an animal is probably the only time in their life that they will actually ever experience true unconditional love.
We're going to do a live, not live, but live for the podcast reading of one of our dogs.
We would really love you guys to just get a little settled, take a little breath. Yeah,
get your Kleenex.
Right, yeah. You can eat them.
Karen Meredith, first of all, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. This is a brand new area for us, I think, like in any capacity. We haven't really talked about this on any of our platforms, and I'm so excited to learn more about it. So thank you both so much for coming on.
You're so welcome. We're excited to be here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely. So to get started, can each of you kind of give us a little bit of insight into who you are, your background, and how you got to the position you're in now?
Currently, I am a soul level animal communicator, soul level intuitive coach. I am also an energy healer through Pangu Shengong energy work, and I'm a Qigong instructor. And I also have a certificate for end of life companion animal doulaship. The animal communication stuff started for me in 2017 when my cat Hockey Puck died. And that's a whole story that we'll get to when we talk about the ACC, but also founded the Animal Communication Collective, which we'll also talk about. But I actually am a retired and recovered marketing and branding person. I lived in that. I actually went to college for it. I went to Switzerland to grad school for it. I founded a company. I had three partners and up to 15 employees at one point in Boston, Massachusetts. It was a big company for us. And when the pandemic hit and things changed, and I was starting to do all of this, I was given a message and a sign that the guides were gonna stuff the turkey full, as they said, and make it explode so that I'd have no choice but to move into this instead.
Wow.
And that's pretty much exactly what happened. And so I left my company and I'm doing this full time.
Yeah. Wow. And so with your company, were you doing marketing and branding for other businesses?
Yeah, we were doing marketing and branding for hospitals and colleges and technology companies all around the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That is quite a stark difference to what you're doing now.
I know. And we won a lot of awards too.
Wow. Do you enjoy what you do now more? I mean, I feel like it's got to be a bit calmer, right?
It's more soulful. And I think when I started, the creativity of what I used to do before was, you know, it filled me with a passion and it was exciting, the possibilities of helping people through media and branding and marketing and messaging. But as time went on and business got more fraught with all kinds of things like the dot-com era and, you know, finance stuff and all the things that happened in the early 2000s, it really sent people into a very jaded, panicked space. And really, I feel like civility kind of went away. And there was just too much expectation that you were kind of a hired gun to do what you were told to do, you know, that kind of energy, which I just didn't like that. And then I was growing in the whole capacity of the energy work in the Qigong. I was feeling everyone else's angst and pain, but not knowing how to help because I wasn't in a position to be allowed to help. I was supposed to perform. So it, you know, the more I grew in this, the more I realized this isn't where I'm going to be able to be the most helpful for people.
And what about you, Meredith?
Many years ago, I went to school on the East Coast and moved up and down the East Coast for a while. Many years ago, I accidentally moved home and took over the reins of a family business. And I'm in Mississippi. Took over the reins of a family business and turned it into my own business. And then several years later, 8, 9 years ago, actually was kind of unexpectedly forced to take over the reins of another family business. So I'm a business owner, an entrepreneur, and I do, I have a retail business, and I also do commercial real estate and property development, which is not anything that I ever thought that I was going to be interested in doing. About 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, I adopted a pair of puppies that had some behavioral issues, and I realized I had found my calling. I went into training for animal behavior dog training and thought, I found my calling. This is what I want to do. Well, in about, what, January of 2017, Karen, is that when it was? I tripped over a one-off webinar about animal communication. First time I'd ever used Zoom in my entire life. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go to this and see what happens. Well, what do you know? Karen was also in that webinar. And that's the first time we laid eyes on each other. And that sort of launched a thing for me. I started pursuing this animal communication, went through every class that was offered in the school that we both trained in. Karen and I finished all of those classes together and have sort of been together ever since. What I'd really thought would happen was that animal communication would be an interesting addition to my dog training experience, but it ended up being the other way around. I've almost completely let go of my training and do primarily animal communication, but my dog training and behavior knowledge really comes into play in working with animals in the animal communication. So I look forward to the day when I can be recovering from all of my business obligations, but unfortunately I'm not there yet. So I am doing this part-time, do a lot of volunteer work with the Animal Communication Collective, as well as a few other animal organizations. And it's just a passion. I absolutely love it.
Can animal communication affect behavior or used in training? Can those two go together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The knowledge I have of behavior from, you know, the training perspective, and I'm completely positive reinforcement trainer. I realized that I was using a lot of my natural, innate, intuitive abilities in figuring out how to work with these animals that I was working with in training. But now I have the ability to just ask them. So you've got this behavior issue. Tell me why you're exhibiting this behavior issue and let's work on that. So I have lots of different modalities. Yeah. I'm also a certified animal Reiki practitioner. I forgot to mention that. So I pull all of these things together and use it in my animal communication as well as in my behavior consultations for people that need help because their animals are acting weird.
Wow. Yeah, that's a very useful skill for a trainer and behaviorist to have, I would imagine.
Well, I hope so. I've always said that all I ever wanted to do was save the world. And when I found dog training, I thought, well, I'll save the world one dog-human relationship at a time. But now I have so many more tools in my toolbox to be able to help people and animals with their interactions and their relationships and whatever lessons we're working on together to get through this world.
Let's get into the Animal Communication Collective. Can you explain what it is and kind of the driving force behind that?
This is a funny story in a way, the full story. Meredith and I had graduated from the school that we went to. The reason why we both ended up at the school is because, right, Meredith, you had lost a pet too. That was a kind of one of your driving forces. A lot of people that come into animal communication find their way there and want to learn about it because they have lost what we would call a soul baby or a soul animal. And they are just so lost in how to understand what happened to them that they will seek out, you know, psychic and intuitive help. And that's what happened to me. And so after I went back to find and go to the school of Meredith, because I lost my sweet cat Hockey Puck, this little black panther Hockey Puck. And after going through the school together, I was actually at a wake of a friend's family member's wake. And we went out to get something to eat afterward, my husband and I, and we were sitting there talking about the fact that this was right before the pandemic hit. And I was talking about, he was asking me, what are you going to do with this now that you've gone through this school? I'm really trying to understand what's happening to my wife here. And I said, you know, I just feel like there's more that can be done. And as soon as I started talking, I could feel hockey puck on my head and on my shoulder. Kind of, I was saying things I didn't even know where they were coming from. Wow. And I started saying, I don't know. I feel like what we need to do, and I'm like, as if I'm talking for hockey puck, what we need to do is to like help more people, and animals and people need to understand better relationships. And we have to do this in bigger groups, and we have to help the rescues that save all these animals so that they can raise more funds and we can create awareness. And Drew's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't know. I feel like hockey puck's talking to me right now. And so it came out in this blob. And then I went to Meredith and a few other people. I'm like, okay, this is what I heard from hockey puck. It all just came out on the table, like verbal diarrhea. What do we do with this? And that's when we started brainstorming. We could do this. We could all come together, because in our new world as communicators and intuitives, a lot of times we become very siloed. There aren't many organizations out there where intuitives all band together to work together in this way. And having gone through a school where there was a lot of camaraderie and the great alumni connections with each other, there was the possibility to say to everybody, we can all work together on this. And everybody agreed that I talked to, and we all came together and formed the Animal Communication Collective. And Meredith and I mapped out the whole structure and the guidelines. Meredith wrote all the copy. I branded the idea. We put it all together. We trademarked it. We had all these amazing fellow alumni come and want to do it with us. And we founded this amazing organization that is helping rescues and shelters all over the world now raise funds.
Wow. That is amazing. What do you do with clients? So like a client comes to you and wants to pay for your services. What does that look like?
First of all, there is no payment. We don't take any money. It's 100% volunteer.
Wow.
The Animal Communication Collective part of our lives is 100% done from love for zero money.
That's amazing.
But Meredith, you can explain how it works.
Yeah, let me tell you a little how that works. First of all, I'm laughing because when Karen came forward with this idea, we finished that particular meeting with our team of friends, and I picked up the phone and called her, and I was like, look, we can't put 11 psychics in a room together and expect everything to just flow smoothly. We've got to create a structure. We've got to make a plan. And so that's where Karen and I really partnered up and figured out how we were going to make this flow. And we've learned a lot over the last couple of years as we've been doing it, but we really do have an awesome structure in place. So what we do is we reach out. We have a wonderful ambassador, Jody Jacobs, who's on our team, who spent a full year, I think during the pandemic, right, Karen, locating shelters and rescues who needed help, and made a donation daily for 365 days to shelters and rescues that she had vetted and found significant and worthy and important. And so she has done a lot of our outreach, but we've also met through, you know, events like where we met you guys and various collaborative efforts through other organizations. Either we reach out to a shelter rescue and say, are you interested? Or they reach out to us and say, hey, we're interested. And what we do is meet with this organization for a couple of months, actually select a date for an event. We do an online Zoom animal communication event. We bring together four readers from our Animal Communication Collective membership, plus a couple of people who are on the back end taking care of the tech and all of the things that have to happen. And we do an online fundraiser where we do many animal communication readings for members of the audience that we select intuitively. We do a little reading for them with their animal, talk a bit about the animal's personality, the lesson the animal's working on with them. And then as another part of this, we also each donate in the places where we can. We donate a half hour reading, each member of the team. And in places where they can sell raffle tickets, we raffle those off. So we're donating that additional amount of our time. And for a given period of time, usually 6 to 8 weeks after an event, any member of the audience who would like to book a private reading with one of the members of the ACC team, that individual then gives 15% of the cost of that reading back to the organization as well. A lot of time, a lot of effort involved in the planning, and an amazing event, and then another period of time where we have the opportunity to continue to give back to those organizations. And then, you know, we like to, in our social media director does a phenomenal job of getting all of the information out on all of our social media platforms. But we like to kind of feature each of that. We push their organizations. We ask all of our members to like, follow, share their organizations. We really do feel that it's a collaborative effort. We're all striving for so many of the same goals. And this is just a way that we are able to do that. Since we are not boots on the ground in the middle of a shelter or rescue, this is a way that we're able to give back to them and the hard, hard work that they do.
That's so amazing. Well, and the thing that I think for a lot of people is they see this kind of stuff. And I was one of those people that sees this and I'm like, okay, come on. Like,
I've converted him.
He just converted me to everything. But what I really is, I think from my perspective, before I got into any of this stuff, it was like, okay, you see these people doing this stuff that you can't really prove one way or the other, and you're paying them and they're asking for a lot of money. Like, it's gotta be a scam. I really love that you guys take the approach of like, we're just here to offer something if you want it. We're not here to ask for anything in return. We're not here to push any sort of agenda. We're saying we believe in this. And if you believe in it too, like, we want to offer this. So I want to commend you for that, because I think that really shows that you're not trying to scam people. And I think there are a lot of people out there that are, both in the holistic and the conventional sense. You know what I mean? But I really think it's incredible what you two are doing. I just had to interject before your question.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you.
Of course.
Well, and one interjection as an answer to your interjection is that we've really seen this community grow a lot. And the number of people, I would say especially since the pandemic, so many people adopted animals that couldn't be properly socialized. They're spending more time at home with their animals and going, oh, I didn't realize you did this during the middle of the day. What's that all about? There seems to be very much a growing interest and acceptance of this type of work. More people losing animals, more people with animals going lost or missing, more people who are super, super interested in this. And part of our mission is to educate people about animal communication and what it is we're trying to do as the good people who are really behind making a positive change with the work that we both have the gift and the ability and the training to offer to the world. It really is about being of service to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really feel like it's one of those things where it's like, especially if you're kind of a skeptic and not in this world, it's like a once you experience it, then you believe it kind of thing. Kinsey has a family friend who's an anesthesiologist, very smart guy, but very like Western, you know, science, studies, all this stuff. But he was telling us a story about how he was doing Doctors Without Borders, right?
Yeah.
In the Middle East. And he got really, really sick from, I think, the water or the food or whatever it ended up being, and was basically on death's door. And this woman came in and did acupuncture on him, on his legs and different things. And like up he popped and was like ready to go 30 minutes later. And he said, I would not have believed it had I not experienced it. So I think that's really kind of a lot of what it comes down to. But I think it's so smart to share content about this too, because then like, there's kind of a concept that I very much believe in where you see something, a story on, like you're watching a show or social media, and you feel like you're in that story. You can envision yourself in it. And so people can kind of get that experience enough to make them curious, and then they can, you know, dive deeper with your content.
Yeah.
Like so many things in the world, your belief system is created around your personal experience. And that can change over the course of your life, depending on what your personal experience is.
You know, speaking to our mission, like our tagline is, you know, supporting animal welfare organizations and giving voice to animals. And we found that, you know, one of the things that helps people is when they realize that their animal family member is a truly separate individual sentient being with a soul, emotions, a life, a perspective that opens their mind to looking at the world in a different way, then we've done our job. because it gives more respect to another living being, you know. And even on my website, and I say, you know, if we can get past the facade of our structures, you know, soul is soul, spirit is spirit. Mm-hmm. And so when we agree to inhabit, I mean, of course, we're doing this. We totally believe in reincarnation to be able to also, as we do this, animals have told us about past lives they've had with people. So if a spirit is willing to enter into this 3D context again to continue to learn, I have profound respect for the way they decided to enter to learn what they are going to learn and to be present to teach how they're going to teach, you know?
I have a question. Do, in your opinion, do souls reincarnate so like a human can reincarnate in an animal and vice versa?
This is a topic of debate, a true beautiful question, a topic of debate amongst many of us. And I would say we have to just trust what we hear from the animals for ourselves. And I do believe there is a little bit of 100% not being able to be sure of what the 100% answer is, mm-hmm. because of the filter that we all live in right now. But from my perspective, I have had animals tell me that they were people in the past. And they have described incredible scenes and pointed at things that when the human, that they're human, because we call their people, they're humans, will say, my God, I've always had this affinity toward this part of the country with that kind of a ranch. And I've always had this feeling that, you know, Fluffy was with me then. But when we start to describe the lessons and what, why they were in human form at that point and why they chose to come back into animal form this time, it's kind of mind-blowing for me as much as the person when I'm sharing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I bet. So yeah. I'm curious, what is the actual training like to become an animal communicator?
Oh, wow. Well, given that Karen and I have both taken and taught every level of coursework that existed within this school at the time we came through, I will tell you that starting from the very beginning, we sort of went into basic training of how to open your psychic senses. And what we've discovered in this amazing community that has built up around animal communication and this school in particular is so many of us knew at a very, very early age that we were highly sensitive people, that we had a lot of intuitive abilities. But then as you go through life, the world kind of shuts that down, right? And tells you, oh, you're too sensitive. There's nothing to that, whatever. We still face that today, you know, and here in, as a middle-aged woman, I still hear that from people all day long. So a lot of these people came in and found a commonality in that regard. And I believe personally from my experience and what I've learned from the animals is that we all have that ability, but it's sort of like a muscle. You have to train it. You have to use it. So is training important? Yes, I do believe it is. So we started with learning to open our psychic senses, you know, seeing, hearing, feeling, some of us smell and taste and all of those things. And then B, learning to trust that this is actually real. It's not all in your head. You're not making it up. And then we started working with the animals. We started working with each other and started working with the animals. What I believe is that all of our animals come into our lives at a particular time for a particular reason to work with us on lessons that we as humans are learning. I think animals are way better than we are as humans, and they sort of dip down and touch us, and we have to raise our vibration to dip up and touch them. And they deliver us these little nuggets of gold and help us in our own personal soul growth and development. The trusting that all of these things are happening in the right place at the right time for the right reason is the hardest part, to be honest with you.
I'm already getting emotional.
It's pretty emotional. It really is pretty emotional. But
it's so beautiful.
Learning to look at it as this beautiful lesson has helped me with how emotional I get around the animals, knowing that there is a purpose for all of these interactions. And there's a reason that we are able to do what we do to help deliver these messages to their humans, to their people.
And the Kenzie, it's really beautiful that you're getting this emotional, because for many people, the love of an animal is probably the only time in their life that they will actually ever experience true unconditional love. And so I've had so many people even come to me and say, I hate to admit it, but I am more distraught over losing my dog than I was my dad. Yeah. Or my brother or my whoever, right?
Totally.
Because the animals have this sense of just being right in the present and being right there with their hearts, and all of their reactions mean something. There's no malice. There's no premeditated negativity. They are being very honest, even in the behaviors that we perceive as bad. It doesn't actually mean they're bad. They're presenting a situation and trying to cope honestly with us. So, you know, to add to what Meredith was saying about the actual training, that the psychic, the intuitive muscles include those 5+ senses, just like we have physical muscles in our body. So we all have all of these muscles. Some of them atrophy over time. Some of them are just, we're more naturally, you know, adept at them. Just like if you are a better runner and somebody else is a better weightlifter, but they're all there for us to choose to use if we want. But it does take, the training really teaches us to drop into our heart space and get out of our heads. And that takes a lot of energy management and grounding and trusting.
I bet. So I'm assuming this can be really heavy sometimes. You know, you're working with dogs that might be toward the end of their life. You're working with dogs that have already passed. What are both of your, let's call it a mental health maintenance plan? What do you do in your personal lives for your own mental health so that you can truly hold this space for other people and their animals?
That's a really great question. For me, I have a form of healing meditation that I've been doing for 23 years now called Pongu Shengong Qigong. And there are a variety of different levels to it, but I've been studying that with Master Owen Wei for 23 years. And that's actually what opened back up my intuition in the first place. So it not only cultivates a life force energy back into my system that helps balance emotion and immune system and all of that, but it actually opened up my third eye as well, because it also helped me heal a lot of my own heart and soul stuff. And you need to connect the two to be a really good intuitive. It's so funny. The first time I realized it was actually like heightening my intuition, I actually was at another wake. Oh my God, me and my wakes.
Oh my goodness.
I was at a wake in, I don't know, it was like 2010, 11. And I could hear the person who had passed like greeting everyone at the door and welcoming everyone and saying hi to everyone. And he actually like heated my back up and almost like pushed me toward a particular person to say, so I'd know she was there. She happened to have the same name as me. And I happened to know her from a acupuncture school that I was on the board of at the time. And we didn't realize we both knew him. And he was so happy that we made the connection.
Wow.
It was really crazy.
This is crazy.
We have some crazy stories.
I bet.
Right, Meredith?
Yeah, we do. We do a lot of heavy work. You know, Karen's a certified end-of-life animal doula. I've done a lot of end-of-life training as well. I intend to do more. I do a lot of work with people whose animals have gone lost or missing. And that's an extremely emotional part of the work I do that a lot of animal communicators don't want to do, because there is so much emotional attachment and grief and inability to really solve the problem, if you will, because sometimes the animals leave for a particular reason. And having to deliver that message to a client is very difficult. So what do I do for my own personal support and well-being? We have been taught and have learned a lot of energy management techniques over the course of our training. I do have a meditation practice, not as consistent or as strong as I would like to have. I'm very much a go, go, go person. So I'm a moving meditator. I tend to have my greatest peace and calming and head clearing times when I'm driving long distances or when I'm working in my garden. I tend to find a lot of peace in nature, especially the ocean, which I live entirely too far away from. And I reach out for support with our community. You know, I never would have thought that I would call as some of my dearest friends on the planet, the people that I met through animal communication training and spend time with on a regular basis. Getting to meet them in person is phenomenal, but there are still a lot of people in our community we spend hours each week with, but we've never actually physically been in the same space together. But I'll tell you, when we all get together, the energy that we share is amazing. I mean, you guys have seen us together. It's pretty awesome.
Yes. And actually, I want to add one thing to this, because this is the part that blew me away. And I think, Meredith, you would agree. When we're in the moment of the reading with someone, and we're talking to them, and we're talking and connecting with their animal, who is sharing stuff about how close they are to passing, or the health decline, or, you know, just spend the next few days with me because that's all we have, or I just passed and here's what it was like for me. When we're in those moments with those people, it's amazing how much the animal supports us. Wow. To almost like distance our emotions. It's like they've taken my own emotions and moved them aside so that I can be more of a conduit for their message. It's like they're protecting. I feel like I'm being protected by them so that I can share what they need to share to help their human.
Wow. They're just so good.
They are too. They're so innocent. And I really like what you said. Like, they don't play games. They don't have any malice intent. They can't lie. Mm. They are just themselves through and through, living totally in the moment. Like, there's just so much we can learn from them, I think, you know?
And one really cool part about that too, that you just said is, and this is part of our intention when we're going into a reading, but the animals always deliver the messages in a way that I, as the conduit, as the communicator, can hear and deliver, and in a way that the human, if they're in the appropriate managed space of their energy, can receive. The animals really know how to present that in pure love and light and kindness and helpfulness. I've never once experienced any malice coming through from anyone, from any animal in the course of a reading. They do really support us. And I agree with you, Karen. They protect our hearts, because the being such a sensitive person, we got to have some protection there. And they support us in the work that we do.
It does fascinate me, because I can't watch a movie where there are animals in it if the animal's going to get hurt. The minute there is an animal in a movie, I'm already saying to my husband, I'm going to be like this for half the movie. You better turn the sound down. Don, not watching this movie anymore. Yeah. Like, if they hurt that dog, I'm done. But I can watch John Wick and watch him, like, you know, kill everyone. But the dog, I'm like, if that dog gets hurt, I'm done with this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet I can go into these readings and be really present with some pretty deep stuff that has to be shared and said around, you know, passing or ailments or hurt, you know?
So you both mentioned, and we kind of assumed this going into it, you have to have some incredible stories from this journey that you've been on. What are some of the most notable ones, if you don't mind sharing?
And I had forgotten this, but he brought it back to me. So one morning I was sleeping, it was a few years ago, and I was had kind of woken up, but was meditating and half asleep. And I felt a presence around me saying, hey, wake up. I'm trying to talk to you. And I thought somebody was coming into the room, but there was nobody there. And I started saying, who are you? I was literally talking to, in my head, to someone. I thought someone. I'm saying, well, who are you? And he said, you know me. I'm from your childhood. So now you can make me cry. Help me, Michael. Okay. So he said, I'm the gorilla from your childhood. I'm the one that set you on this journey, and I've been waiting to talk to you. And so what he meant was, when I was about 4.5 years old, my mom took me to a local zoo. And when we went into the zoo, one of the first things that we came across were the gorilla, the monkey area, right? And the gorilla cages. And there was an older male gorilla just pacing by himself. And I don't need to go into what he was doing, but he was very unhappy. And I stood in front of him with my mom, and I was getting really upset. And I was saying, he's really upset. Why is he so upset? Why isn't anybody helping him? And she said, no, he's fine. He's just doing, you know, he's just being a monkey, you know? And I was so distraught with his pain that I actually decided I hate zoos. I will never go back to a zoo. And I hid in the bushes of the maze for the rest of the time. But he woke me up and he said, I have been waiting for you to connect with me. I have been waiting because I wanted to tell you, I'm the one that started you on this journey. I'm the one that woke you up and made you realize that we have feelings and that this is an important thing. And he said, I've been pushing you quietly all along. So I said to him, so what am I supposed to call you? Like, I don't know what your name was. And, you know, I'm old now, so he has passed. I was 4 or 5. And he said, just call me Michael. So now that's why I said, Michael, help me so that I could just calm my emotions. Well, I told you his story. And so he does help me. Sometimes I do feel like extra heat around my head and he comes into my head and I ask him, okay, what are you helping me with right now? So he's quite a force for me.
So what would it be like for you to go to a zoo right now?
I actually wouldn't.
Yeah, I can imagine that from your experience.
No, not unless it's one of those true safari type, open, plenty of land for the animals, stay in your car so you don't get eaten type situations.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah. I won't go to a zoo.
Yeah, I totally get that. That is unbelievable. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. In my journey through the positive reinforcement training world, I have come across so many amazing positive reinforcement trainers, brilliant trainers, Ken Ramirez, Susan Friedman, who came from psychology into the training world. And a lot of these trainers have committed some of their time into dealing with wild animals and zoos and refuges and sanctuaries. And part of their mission has been to teach these positive reinforcement training techniques to help zoos create better habitats that are more natural for the animals. I used to have the feeling that I was completely anti-zoo because I grew up with a pretty lousy zoo up the road. You know, the hippo was in, you know, a swimming pool. But watching some of these trainers bring zoos forward into positive experiences for the animals and the types of research and training and things that they're learning from these animals, I'm actually shifting into, I can be supportive of that. Not this one with the hippo in the swimming pool, but this one where it's all about making the animals as comfortable as possible. And that's been a weird thing for me to admit. But watching these incredible trainers make that a positive experience is bringing me along that path, for what that's worth.
Yeah, it's like you kind of take something that's imperfect and you work to make it better. You know, I totally respect that.
Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Mm. But neither are any of us. As long as we're always striving to be better, we're on the right path. So my early childhood animal communication experience that I didn't know was such a thing at the time, my very best friend on the planet, we literally were in the crib together. His mother and my mother were best friends. Our grandparents were in each other's weddings. I'm grateful he now lives across the street from me and we get to see each other every day. He's a veterinarian, but he's always had just this enormous heart for animals. So playing at his house when we were probably 4 years old, there were animals running around everywhere. And he had a boa constrictor named Quincy, and he had all of these phenomenal animals. But I remember squatting down in the driveway. We were tomboys. We were probably climbing trees or something. Squatting down in the driveway, and his Boykin Spaniel came up to me and held her nose probably an inch or two away from mine and was just looking into my eyes. And my nose electrified. I felt this tingling throughout my face. Because her nose was so close to mine. I didn't know what to call that. I didn't know what to make of that. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And then I realized through my youth and childhood, until I sort of shut down, anytime I was that close to an animal, I felt that. Well, that's one of my signs now. When I know I'm truly connecting with an animal in a reading, I get this electric feeling on the end of my nose.
Wow.
And I look back to that experience when I was, I mean, literally 4 years old, probably 4 or 5 years old, and think, that's what that was about. That's what that was about. Yeah. And now I trust it. And now I get it. And now I ask for it. Yeah. If we're truly connected, show me this feeling in the end of my nose. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. That's a perfect segue into my next question. So how do you guys ensure authenticity and like effectiveness of your communications?
We are very heartfelt about setting an intention before every reading. So for myself, I do a little energy management before my readings anyway. I want to make sure that I'm in the best place for my readings. You know, I'm making sure that I haven't gone out drinking the night before, you know. Yeah. I wait till the weekend for that. Because I really want to be a good conduit. So there is a bit of a, there is a commitment if you really want to be a good intuitive to taking care of your tools, which are your heart and soul, your third eye, you know, your, the structure of how you feel. And, you know, we all have bad and down days, and I've had to cancel some sessions if I'm not feeling up to it because I want to be the best conduit I can be. But that said, before every reading, I do have a mantra, kind of a way of kind of setting the situation and calling in an intention that kind of creates a sacred space around myself and my clients, animal and human, that I actually involve them in and have them be a part of it. And as I kind of do this setup so that they understand that this is a very sacred situation as well. And I want them to be just as present and open to the connection as I am. So, I mean, that's how I do it. Is I really try to set the intention. And I have to say, like 99% of the time, it works really well.
I'm also very careful. We are all trained to be, but we're also very careful to deliver the information that comes through. You know, set the intention that the information that comes through is for the greatest and highest good of everyone connected to this reading, and that I am just the conduit. I will deliver the information that I receive, and I will not try and interpret it or put it together in a pretty little package for you. I will tell you, I see this, I hear this, I feel this in my body. And then it's the job of the client to determine whether or not those things make sense, or they can take any of that information, or they can apply that to their animal. And I always tell them, if it doesn't make sense, just tell me, no, it doesn't make sense. I'll ask the question in a different way, ask the animal to deliver it to me in a different way so that I can present it to you. But then sometimes at the end of a reading, it doesn't make sense. And then a couple of weeks later, it all will click. That happened to me personally. When I was training, I had a reading from a colleague who gave me this beautiful reading, but I was like, I don't understand what any of that means. Well, 2 weeks later, I'm holding my elderly cat and he's passing in my arms, and boom, everything that she had told me in this reading suddenly made complete and perfect sense to me. So there's a lot of a question of trust. And I'm sure Karen will agree. We've all had readings where we call each other and go, oh my God, that was terrible. I don't know how I actually can trust myself that this was correct. And sometimes those are the readings where 2 weeks later, the client will reach out and say, oh my God, I get it now. You know, I absolutely get it now.
Yeah.
So delivering the information as we receive it, not trying to wrap it up and put it together, is one way to really hold on to that authenticity, because I know I'm not putting my own experience, interpretation, perception into the situation. I'm relying on the client and the animal to make that connection together.
Okay, we got through 4 out of the 8 questions. I think we should move on to the reading, which we are very excited about. We're going to do a live, not live, but live for the podcast reading of one of our dogs. So I'm going to let both of you take the reins here.
All right. We would really love you guys to just get a little settled, take a little breath. Yeah,
get your Kleenex.
Right.
Yeah.
You can eat them. Okay.
Take a deep breath and feel a little grounded, okay?
Take a deep breath.
I can see you're both a little nervous.
So let's just take a couple of breaths. We like to take some belly breaths. It's energy management. So breathe in through your nose, let the breath go into your belly. Breathe out through your nose, let the breath travel down your legs and out the soles of your feet. Just imagine you're doing this. Two or three breaths at your own pace. And as we start to get settled, you may begin to feel a little heavier in your seat. Your mind gets a little quieter. That means you're lightening up your vibration to open up your intuition. This is a really great thing to do for anyone listening before you connect with your own animals in general. Okay, and then I'm going to invite all of our souls to come together. Bryce, Kenzie, myself, and Meredith into a sacred space. I ask that we all convene in this sacred space, deep in the universe and the night sky, where we are protected by the divine, no matter what we think that is. And in our sacred space, we ask that all of the information that comes through today is for your best and highest good and the good of all, and continues to evolve and heal your hearts and souls. And who are we speaking with?
Today we're going to speak with Cooper.
What's his name? Cooper?
Cooper, yeah.
And I also ask that this information helps build a deeper bond and clearer communication between you and Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper is a dog. Mm-hmm. And he is male. Mm-hmm. And is he alive or in spirit?
He is alive.
He is alive. So that is really all the information that we like to know going into a reading. We want to be sure that we're not being influenced in any way by, and this is Cooper, and this is how we got him, and this is his situation right now. We'll have an opportunity to share all of that later. We would like to know one question that you would like to ask of Cooper.
I would like to know what's the happiest part of his day.
So we like to rephrase a question into sort of an open-ended structure to give him more opportunity to bring forward information. So the way I would rephrase that would be, what is it that Cooper would like all of us to know about his happiness? What makes him happy living with you guys? Does that make sense? Amazing. What would he like us to know about the things that make him happy?
I like that too. A little bit more open. Because it takes it out of you guys doing something as opposed to him being involved or feeling something.
Yeah, I like that. One thing that I think made me, or I was feeling the most nervous about, was like, we have this thing right now where we never feel like we're doing enough. Like, you know what I mean? And so I just want this to be like a more positive, like,
yeah. Okay. All right. So let's let Cooper take a minute to show himself in the way that he wants us to see him. Share a little bit about his personality, things you may or may not know, and we'll go from there. And then we'll get into the question.
So I immediately get a response from Cooper, and this is, I'll deliver the information and then I'll tell you that this is a sign, this is a scene that I frequently get that means something to me in my toolbox. But I'm going to ask you before I try and give you my understanding of it. So I see Cooper coming in literally on a pogo stick, like a racquetball in a racquetball course, court, bouncing off the walls. But then I see him holding up a mirror and he's showing me your reflection in the mirror as well. And he said, they're like this too, that there's a busyness and a go, go, go that is reflected in both his personality and in both of yours personalities. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
So as he came in for me, I was laughing because he kind of slid in like this, ta-da. And I heard, here I am, super duper Cooper pooper scooper. And he's like sliding in like all that he is in a bag of chips.
I see Tom Cruise in Risky Business when you do that, you know, that sliding in.
Mm-hmm. He's just like, ta-da, I'm here. And he feels like quite a boy. You know, like some dogs, you're like, yeah, he's male or she's female, but there isn't that. But he feels like a boy, like a real boy. You know what I mean? I don't know if you know what that means. That's how he's coming through to me. Like,
yes,
got that boy charm.
It's funny you should say that because I got an immediate flash. I get a lot of references in TV shows, movies, lots of Monty Python, lots of Bugs Bunny, lots of Star Wars. It's just, those frequently come in for me. But I got a flash of the Little Rascals, and like, everybody's dirty and got, you know, smudges on them and alfalfa, you know, hair sticking up in a wild way. And nobody cares. Nobody's worried about their personalities. But there's a spottiness. You remember Petey, the dog in Little Rascals, how he had that great big, you guys are probably way younger than remembering Little Rascals.
No, I've seen Little Rascals for sure.
Ring around his eye. So I'm seeing these clumps of spots. And I will say that when an animal shows a visual image of a physical appearance, more often than not, it's not what they actually look like in body. It's something about their personality that they want to bring forward. So I'm seeing these spots, and it's morphing from Petey and Little Rascals to like Beagle with a nose that's, you know, his nostrils are open this big, taking all of the sensory information in around him, to is it the Holstein cow? You know, the cow with the spots, like the Ben and Jerry's cow. And he's showing me all these different examples of creatures with big blotchy spots on them. I have no idea what any of that means, but I'll ask him while you take off from there, Karen.
So maybe this is tied together from a different angle, because I asked him, so tell me a little bit about your personality. And on one hand, he's like this, he showed me himself as this really fun, playful guy, loving life, running around, being all happy. But then at the same time, he then showed me the cowardly lion from the Yellow Brick Road. And he's like, I am king of the forest. And he's doing this. But at the same time, what he's making me feel like there is a layer of him that's very sensitive.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you guys? Yeah. So he has all this fun and bravado, but he's also really sensitive. And that he's like, he's all happy until somebody, he thinks that he's done something wrong. And he looks up at me like, did I upset somebody? So he's got this real super sensitive side is what he's presenting to me too through that image. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, definitely does.
And maybe that's what the spots relate to.
Well, it's more like from the spots, more like the, you know, rough and tumble kids to the taking it all in with the, there's a lot of nose activity going here. I'm seeing huge nostrils. I'm seeing nose, that tingling at the end of my nose. There's something about either his interest in scent or his ability to take it all in that way. But then shifting to cow, I want to stand out here in this field and graze on this grass. It's more like he's showing me different levels of personality. But in all of this, I feel very much a sense of a performer. When he's active, he's very, very active. Sometimes he tries to cover up how he's feeling by putting up a front. And then sometimes he wants to be backstage in the wings, working on his character. There are lots of layers to this personality here. And some of it is a performance, and some of it is a cover up, and some of it is a exhaustion the day after the show. Because it feels like a lot of work to be a good boy. And sometimes he just wants to withdraw and not have to be anything at all.
And he is actually sharing with me, he's kind of diving into your personalities with me, because they will sometimes jump ahead and say, well, I want to talk about how I see mom and dad too. And he's telling me he is, he's got a depth of sensitivity similar to you, Kenzie, that everything can be fine. And then, all of us, like, there's this depth of worry going on, or fear that we didn't do enough, or I might have upset somebody, and working so hard to make everybody happy. And he's like, I'm kind of like mommy in that way. And so he's a really great barometer for you, actually, and a really beautiful sensitive resonance for you, about you guys actually understanding each other in that way, which is. And he's which is why he knows that you get very worried about whether he's happy, because he feels your worry. He knows when you get into that worried, like, I'm not doing enough. Oh my God, I'm not a good enough human being thing. And he's like, don't do that, mommy. Don't do that, mommy. So he's got a little bit of that connection with you, Kenzie. And with Bryce, he so wants to please you. He so looks up to you and your vibrancy and your energy for what he's telling me, like, you've got this great presence around the house, that sometimes you do some really silly things. He watches you kind of do some really silly things around the house. Like, I don't know if you're singing and dancing or just like cracking jokes, but there's something where you like break into something that's really funny. And he loves what that energy that you spit out around the house when you do that. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
Jumping back into my spotted animal series that keeps flashing before me, now I'm seeing like a big Harlequin Great Dane and the aspects of the personality of a Great Dane. You know, they frequently are very stoic and very beautiful and very calm. And we say, oh, they're so aware of their size. But then sometimes they forget it and they do all this goofy stuff and try and run on the hardwood floors in their legs go out like Bambi on the ice, and they're trying to act like a terrier and get under the sofa. And you're like, you weigh 150 pounds, dude, what's your problem? So I'm feeling a real, what he's showing me is the two opposite sides of this card, this elegant, beautiful, stoic, I know exactly how large and how beautiful and fabulous I am. And then the, oh shit, I forgot. And now I'm trying to chase a ping pong ball under the sofa and I forget. And Bryce, I feel like this is for you, that there's a lot of, look, here I am, I'm organized, I'm all together. And then this whole goofy side comes out and you're like, you're a Great Dane acting like a Jack Russell. Does that make any sense to you with regard to your personality? This is part of why it's fun to read couples and why it's fun to do tandem reading with couples, because they'll bring forward different parts and pieces that relate to each of you.
Ask him specifically if he'll share what makes him happy. What is important for you guys to know about what brings out the joy in him?
I just want to give him more.
Yeah. One immediate response is this cow that's out chewing grass in the field is the only animal in the field. It's wide open green spaces, a beautiful fence, but not a fence that actually contains anything. It's a fence that is more decorative than functional, but this cow is alone in the middle of this field doing what a cow do. I am hearing a message to deliver to you to take some time alone. And that is alone together and alone independently to do the thing that nurtures your soul. Don't forget that there are two parts in a unit, and there is together together and there is together independently. And what brings you that peace and that comfort may be different. And you have to honor and respect that in yourselves and in each other.
So he's showing me a picture of him laying on his back with his belly exposed and his head up like this with his snout up. And he looks like he's sandwiched in between the two of you. And like there's blankets and stuff. And he's just like, oh, now I'm in heaven. Because I said, what makes you happy? And he's like, when we're all just snuggled and lying here and relaxing. And it looks like somebody's reading. One of you, it looks like somebody's reading, and or maybe you're on a device, but to him, it looks like you're reading, but you're all just laying there together. And he's sandwiched in this soft blanket between the two of you. Does that make sense to you guys? Does that happen?
Yeah. Sounds just like our couch.
Yep. So he loves that. And he loves it because everybody's just quiet and calm and relaxed, and he's getting loves. And you guys are just, there's a more of a softer tone because you're so busy all day. There's a softer tone between the two of you that he just enjoys being in the middle of, when you're like, oh my God, I forgot to tell you we did this. And, oh, what do you think about that? Or look at what I just did. And somebody, and you pass something to each other and you're laughing. Like, he just loves that energetic connection when you're not go, go, go. That makes him happy.
So two bits here, and one of which actually makes me laugh because I see a red ball. And that's an example we give all the time of how we deliver lessons and not just 3D information. I like my red ball, but there is a red ball in this scene. And then there's a plushy toy with big, long parts and pieces that's sort of a tug. Interactive play. He doesn't want to sit and chew on his Kong. He wants interactive play with the two of you, and that brings him a lot of joy. Those are two toys that he's showing me. I don't know if those are relevant to you. But the main thing he was showing me was a kitchen dance party. Like, cooking, got some music playing, and everybody gets super silly. I see both of these sides of his personality. We want to chill, we want to relax, but then we've also got this area in our lives where we need to just expend some energy without focus, without concern about what anyone else thinks about us, and let's dance barefoot in the kitchen while we're cooking on the stove on a Sunday night, listening to some 80s music. Let it go. Let it out there. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, who's this one?
That's
is Harper. That him?
No, this is Harper.
That's Harper.
She's very in tune when we like get emotional, or even like when we're talking excitedly about something. She's like, she's our first baby. So,
yeah.
Oh, she's a sweetie pie.
She is.
Okay, so this is going to sound so cliche, but I just got to deliver it because it's what he said. You already do enough. He's happy. You do enough. He doesn't like that you worry that you're not doing enough. He doesn't like the energy that you of the worry. Because to him, he likes his happy, settled family. He likes what's happening. So when you guys are worried about, I'm not giving him enough, he just feels the energy of like, uh-oh, dad's worried. And I don't like him to be worried because everything's okay. So he keeps trying to say, everything's okay. Everything's okay. Just like that.
I feel like he's modeling some behavior for you. You know, they do this amazing thing where sometimes they model for us and sometimes they mirror us. But he's showing you through us that there are lots of different ways. You got this pent up energy and you don't know what to do with it. By God, dance in the kitchen. If you're exhausted, by God, sit on the sofa and scratch him on the belly. If you wonder if you're doing enough for him, pick up that red ball or that tuggy purple octopus toy and spend a little time together. And then go stand in your field and eat some grass and relax and just be still and quiet.
Yeah. And he just said, I don't know what this means, Bryce, but he wants you to sit and talk to him and tell him really stupid jokes.
Oh, dad jokes.
He's like,
dad jokes.
Because he likes hearing you talk to him. So he wants you to just look him in the eye and say, all right, here's another really funny bad one. The guy walks into a bar. And just like to be in the moment telling him really stupid, funny stories gets you guys really connected to where he can feel your emotions. And that's what he loves. He loves listening to you talk to him so that he can be like, oh, dad's talking to me.
I feel like he would greatly appreciate puns and limericks.
I love it. He's sitting right here with us too.
Yeah.
Are you anything else, so Karen? Funny. I'd love to get some feedback from them. They both got tissues out.
Yeah, so I'm just. I know.
Oh, look, he's spotty.
Cooper.
This is him.
Spotty.
Look at those eyes.
Oh,
y'all, he's very soulful. Oh, he's very intuitive. You got to listen to him. And Harper's like, what about me?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's thank Cooper for like letting us connect with him and share some messages from mom and dad.
You're so sweet.
We love you. And we're going to disconnect from you guys.
Thank you,
Cooper. All right. Oh, he does kind of look like the lion. He looks like the lion from. Oh.
He's a sensitive soul.
Yeah, he really is.
So sensitive.
It's really interesting what you said about the cow. We have a dog that basically looks like a Great Dane whose color is that of a dairy cow. Black and white, white with black spots. I mean, you were describing it. I was like, that's Banksy. Yeah, that's Banksy. And he is Banksy, like, will sit and cross his paws and be very regal, and then he'll be jumping off of your head, running around the backyard. He's like, he's the 2-year-old puppy, and he's still just so puppy, but he is, like, very spotted, totally black and white. Yeah, well, and their relationship has been really hard, actually. So we had Harper and Cooper, just the two of them to begin with, and they are their brother and sister, just from different litters, so same parents. And they were with each other for 2 or 3 years before we got Banksy. And when we got Banksy, it was really hard at first, and Cooper did not take to him very well. But I do think that they're very much starting to get along.
Oh my gosh.
He's not a dairy cow. He's a dairy cow. But he's,
and you just picked him up and brought him in there. That's amazing.
He's a 60-pound dog. She's like, it's no big deal.
You say hi?
Oh, hi, love.
You can get down. You don't have to stay if you don't want.
Okay, bye.
So yeah, it was interesting.
He's so spotted.
He's so spotted. Big old black spot on his butt. Base of his tail is black. I mean, yeah. And
now you've,
like,
lost
yeah,
your
their
hair.
Relationship was really hard. They Cooper did not take well to him and was very reactive and very aggressive, but their relationship has come a long way to the point where sometimes they play together now, and that's, like, aww, unheard of in this family. So
that's amazing. Well, it's interesting then that they were, you know, he was saying how he loves his in many ways, his one-on-one time with you, where it's just him sandwiched between the two of you, or from Mara's perspective, just the one-on-one time with you guys, so that he has his sense of himself within the context of the whole family.
Yeah.
And wanting you to just talk to him and tell him jokes. Like, I think, you know, those are the things that really make him happy, is that those special one-on-one connections, so he feels like it's smoother in the family and there's less worry.
Yeah.
Well, and Bryce, like, usually I have been pushing really hard. I'm like, let's do special things, like one-on-one with each of them. Like, let's take one paddleboarding, or I've been doing individual walks with him instead of all three of them. And Bryce is always so worried that, like, the others will be sad or anything like that. But I think this is just, like, validation that that's really, really important for him.
And that alone time is okay. Like, it's okay that we all have alone time with each other, without each other. So that feels really good to know.
You two are magic.
That was really incredible. I was really nervous for that, but
this
is
his first, like, any type of intuitive reading.
And I'm watching Cooper right now. He's just rolling on his back on the ground. He looks so happy.
He's having his own dance party in the kitchen. Yeah.
He absolutely is. And Banks is just laying right next to him, staring at him.
Oh my God, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Karen and I read together so often. We work together so often that the energy that we feel when we are working together is so beautiful. All of the people in our community, when you get one or more of us together, the energy really just elevates and boosts each other. But I particularly love reading with Karen. And I think you like reading with me, huh?
I read with you. Yes, I do. Oh, look, see?
Whoa, how did it do that?
Secret Zoom thingy.
Mine doesn't do it. I'm mad.
Karen, you did that 3 times the other day, and I can't do it. Do it again.
I don't know. It's a setting. I don't know. It's a weird setting in my Zoom that I haven't found.
Wow. You really are magic.
She is magic. Yeah.
Well, Karen, Meredith, thank you both so much. I think our audience is really going to be interested in this. So if they are, where can they find you? Where can they connect with you more? Website, social media, that kind of stuff.
So there's a variety of ways they can connect with us. If they want, if anybody would like a private reading from Meredith or I, you can go to either of our websites. One, you can type our names into Google and we come up. But my website is KarenDendySmith.com.
And I'm MeredithTollison.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you can also find us through the Animal Communication Collective, animalcommunicationcollective.com. And if you go to the team page, you'll see us right there at the top of the team page, and that will lead you to our websites as well. And if you are someone at a rescue shelter sanctuary that really wants to talk to us about helping with a fundraising event, definitely go to animalcommunicationcollective.com, and all of our contact information is there. And just email us, reach out to us, and we'll set up a time to talk, because that's also really important. We don't want to forget about that too.
Through that website, you can find the Animal Communication Collective Facebook and Instagram accounts. And again, as Karen said, we have the team page with all of our members, currently female, all female members. So female-led volunteer organization, which I kind of love, of our individual information there as well.
That's amazing. Well, we will include all of those links and information in the description below. So for those of you that are listening or watching, you can access all of that stuff and you don't have to remember all the links. Truly, both of you, thank you so much. This was an incredibly special experience to have, so we really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And if you guys want to ever do a live with us, we would love to come back on and take questions like this from your audience.
Yeah,
that sounds amazing.
Let's do it we have a plan.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But let's definitely do that. Yeah, this is incredible. And I want to continue this message and really start pushing this information, because it's been really impactful for us. So thank you both again. Truly appreciate it. For those of you that are listening or watching, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us. As always, I'm Bryce.
I'm Kinsey.
And we'll see you in the next episode.